Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Do you have a hunger for cinematic horror? Do you enjoy the thrill from seeing boogeymen, beasts, and butchers go about their dark work? Then all you need to do is speak of the devil, and the devil will come to you. Speak of the Devil is a podcast for all movies that have anything from demons and poltergeists to serial killers and the supernatural.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Taylor.
Join us as we embark on a journey through the dark recesses of horror films, from the classics to blockbusters and everything in between.
New episodes come out every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're not scared of anything.
Are you?
I'm Jess.
And I'm Jen.
And we're the hosts of the What the Fuck Is That podcast.
Have you ever wondered, what the fuck is that? Well, we found the podcast that dives deep into the mysterious and the unexplained.
Picture this: gripping storytelling, unexpected twists, with a touch of humor just to keep you on the edge of your seat. All of that and more on the What the Fuck Is That podcast, your go-to destination for chilling true crime, spine-tingling mysteries, and paranormal wonders.
So if you're ready to unravel the unknown, search for WTF Is That podcast on Spotify and hit that follow button.
Trust us, you won't want to miss a single spine-chilling episode. Subscribe now and join the mysterious journey. Bye!
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again to hear our brutal and bizarre stories.
And our boozy drinks.
Yes, can't forget that. Right. What are you going to be telling us about today, Mom?
I am going to be telling you about a weird thing that happened after a very tragic accident that left a lot of people scratching their heads going, what's going on?
Weird.
So it's a little bit of brutal, but it's more bizarre.
Okay.
How about you? What story do you have for us?
I am going to be talking about Larry Hall, who I believe was featured on a Hulu docuseries, but I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
And to go with it, if you know the story, this cocktail will make sense. I have the Liar's Cocktail.
Right.
Because he's a big fat liar.
Yes.
So
this
to make this cocktail.
This was a really good movie, by the way. Well,
oh, it was a movie?
It was a series. It was a doc. It was a drama docuseries. It's really good and totally
kind of like Dahmer.
Watch. Yeah.
Like where it was actors. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check it out then. Because while I was researching it, I saw that they made a show about it. And all the questions kept coming. Like, I'd have a question that I'd try and look up and it'd bring it back to the show. And I'm like, I need the real life answer, not the TV show answer.
No, the show is really good. I think I might have recommended it.
What's it called? It's like Black Swan or something?
Blackbird, I believe.
Blackbird, I think you're right. I think you're right. To go with, got the Liar's Cocktail. So to make it, in a mixing glass with ice, you're going to add 1.5 ounces of gin, 1/2 ounce of dry vermouth, 1/4 ounce of orange curacao, and 1/4 ounce of sweet vermouth.
And
stir them all in an ice glass and strain into a cocktail glass.
I am
not looking
thinking,
forward to this one.
No, I'm pretty sure this is going to be gross.
There's nothing good in there.
Nope. I mean, the gin's good, but not by itself.
Yeah. No.
No, it's going to
like
be gross.
I don't like vermouth either.
Mm-mm. Okay,
right,
here we go.
Let's give
see
it a try.
Absolutely disgusting this is.
Nah, it's gross. I don't like that.
It's even worse than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly.
That's nasty.
Terrible. Would not drink again.
No. That's
I guess you give it to someone that's a liar that you don't like.
Yeah, and then lie to them and tell them it's really good and that they have to drink the whole thing.
Yeah.
Nope. Awful.
Alrighty, let's get into Larry Hall.
Yes.
So Larry Hall was born in Wabash, Indiana on December 11th, 1962 to parents Robert and Era Hall. Larry's father was a grave digger at the Wabash Falls Cemetery and his mother was a homemaker. Larry spent the first few days of his life in the neonatal care unit due to his identical twin brother Gary feeding on him in the womb. Yeah, because I guess it was some kind of weird pregnancy where both the fetuses were in the same
sack.
Sack, maybe? I don't know the logistics of that. But so basically one feeds on the other one and deprives it of oxygen and stuff like that. So
not good.
Larry was not a healthy baby. Oh. Gary and Larry, which why would you name your kids that? That's... If you have twins, don't name them Gary and Larry.
That is borderline child abuse right there. Just saying.
Yeah. So Gary and Larry went to Westward Elementary School, where he started showing early signs of social issues. Larry would often isolate himself in class and on the playground and struggled with his schoolwork due to having a fairly low IQ, which when he was an adult tested at around 85.
Oh.
So... a little bit higher than our Green River Killer, but still pretty low.
Yeah.
Larry didn't make any friends while in school, despite his brother's attempts. Along with his antisocial tendencies, Larry also struggled with bedwetting, night terrors, and had a speech impediment.
Ooh,
so he got hit with a triple whammy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good combo for a kid.
Yeah, Larry's a pediatric psychiatrist wet dream.
That's one way to put it. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Since Larry's father was a grave digger, the family was granted a small house in the graveyard to live in, which resulted in Larry being picked on at school.
Of course.
At 12 years old, that's weird. You shouldn't live on a graveyard even if your dad is working it. This is creepy.
That's weird. Yeah.
It's probably hard to invite friends over. Like, just come to the graveyard and make a left at Susie Ann's grave.
Yeah. Ooh. I wouldn't. No. I could see why kids would make fun of him.
Yeah. At 12 years old, Larry started helping his father with grave digging, which, as you can imagine, isn't the best hobby for a kid to have.
No.
Because he would see a lot of the cadavers and stuff like that.
Okay. If they're digging a grave... the people are in a box. If nothing else, they're in a pine box, but they're more likely in like a full coffin. He's not.
True, but I'm sure there's like.
Unless he's peeking. He's probably lifting the lid.
So,
like.
Larry would often steal from the coffins before they were buried.
Okay, so there you go. All right.
Yeah, he's getting some peeks at him. However. This didn't last very long because Larry's father was fired from his job for putting the wrong coffins in the wrong holes.
Oh,
yeah. He was an alcoholic and guess just mixed them up
just
one day.
Like, this box goes in this. Yeah, that's not a good
look.
It all
kind of looked the same, maybe.
Makes me wonder, like, how they found out.
How often that happens.
Yeah.
Oh.
One, how often it still happens. But how did they find out that he did that?
Somebody dug him up. Ooh.
Maybe.
I wonder if there was like a crime and they had to exhume the body and it's like, this is the wrong person.
Yeah. This is a guy and we're looking for a lady.
For a woman.
Yep.
At the age of 15, Larry was arrested for throwing rocks through a downtown store's windows, among other crimes such as burglaries and arson. After high school, Larry became a janitor and began traveling to various Civil War reenactments. In September 1993, 15-year-old Jessica Roach was riding her bike around her home in Georgetown, Illinois, when she disappeared. Nearly 2 months later, her body was discovered in a cornfield in Indiana. Upon the discovery of Jessica, several witnesses came forward and said they saw a van driving through the cornfield late at night and just so happened to get the license plate number. The van came back to Larry and he was subsequently arrested. While questioned by police, Gary was shown a picture of Jessica and he immediately turned away and covered his eyes, but claimed he had never seen her before, which is a strange reaction to have to someone you've never seen.
Right. Fishy.
After some pushing, he confessed to kidnapping Jessica and strangled her with a belt in the woods after assaulting her. That same day, Larry confessed to multiple other murders under similar circumstances, including Trisha Rietler, who was abducted walking back to her dorm from the store. Her body was never found, though. However, the following day, when they resumed questioning Larry, he recanted all of his confessions, saying he was just telling the police about his dreams.
Oh, dreams. Yep. That's what. However, in the
recanted confessions, he stated some details that were not known to the public. So the cops kind of were like, definitely did it, but
we're not buying.
This led to his incarceration. However, he wasn't locked up for murder, rather abduction, and sentenced to life in prison. The police felt that he was lying, and so they enlisted a man named Jimmy Keene, who was serving 10 years on drug charges. Keene was approached and offered a deal. If he could get a real confession, he would be set free and his record scrubbed clean. Jimmy obviously agreed, and it sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So he was shipped from his prison to Larry's prison in Springfield, Missouri. One day, Jimmy saw Larry carving some wooden falcons and marking locations on a map. When Jimmy approached him, Larry claimed that falcons protected the dead, which is just a weird thing to say.
Yes.
I think it's the other way around. I think falcons eat the dead. Well, no, I don't think they're scavengers. I think they eat live things.
Yeah, but I've never heard that about a falcon protecting the dead, but...
No, he's just making that shit up.
Probably. I mean, he is a liar, after all.
True. Yeah. Based on the cocktail. Yeah. Jimmy called the FBI and left them a message explaining that Larry had made a wooden falcon for all the marks on the map, which Jimmy thought were the locations of the bodies. Right after this, Jimmy confronted Larry, but this caused Jimmy to be sent to the hole. However, the FBI never got the message.
No.
So he's just sitting in the box
so
for
the
nothing.
Hole for nothing. Oh, shit.
Yeah. When Jimmy was released from the hole, Larry had discarded the map and the birds.
Shit.
Larry was never tried for murder. However, here's everyone he confessed to murdering and later recanted or was suspected of killing. 19-year-old Naomi Lee Kidder, 26-year-old Yuala Mial Chavez, 10-year-old Linda Wedley, 16-year-old Wendy Fenton, 19-year-old Paulette Webster, 20-year-old Michelle Lee Dewey, 22-year-old Laura DePies, 19-year-old Trisha Lynn Rietler, and 15-year-old Jessica Lynn Roach. So he's got, what was that, 9-10 bodies?
So I thought that Jimmy did get a confession out of him, or at least enough to get himself off his prison term. Or maybe they made that up for the movie. For the TV series.
Let me see.
Which is totally possible. I mean, they could have spun it. Because, it was a a TV miniseries, but it's a really good show. I did look it up. It's called Blackbird, and it's on Apple TV. We watched it a couple year ago, year and a half ago. I don't know, a while ago.
Oh, yeah, I guess he was. He did spend 5 years, looks like.
He was there for a while trying to get the confession. And I think, you know, at least in this show, they made it sound like he had to do it very subversively so that it wasn't, you know, like, hey, tell me, did you kill these people? Because he was scared that the guy was going to come after him.
Yeah. That's just so super weird. And you also don't want to get caught doing that in prison. That's being a rat.
Yeah, you don't want to be a snitch. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good show. I highly recommend it. But I looked back. I don't think I recommended it as a chaser, but I definitely should have.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out then.
Yeah.
What's your story, Mom?
So my story is about cell phones.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not about pagers and the recent...
Nope, not pagers.
Did you see that?
I've seen a little bit, but I haven't been paying attention because you know how fond I am of the news and how I don't pay attention to it.
Yeah. It's just a funny... Who uses pagers? Terrorists,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. If you've got a pager on, somebody should be looking at you sideways because it's not normal behavior in this day and age. I can't remember the last time I saw a pager, a physical pager
on a
person.
One.
Right. I had one.
I was born after cell phones were out. I don't know when the first cell phone
was.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
I think
no pagers
your dad,
in my life.
I think your dad had a pager when we met. But did I have a pager? No, I had like one of the old original like flip phones where, you know, texting didn't exist. It was just for calling people. But anyway, this is a little bit of a more modern story. It happened in 2008. So, like I said, cell phones. And everybody knows that cell phones are a direct link between us and our loved ones. Most people that have them use it daily to communicate with family and friends. But what if something weird happened with that communication? Something that made you go, that was strange. And then trying to look for that answer can't be easy. So the story might leave you asking more questions than might have any good answer for. There's a lot of questions that make you go, what? So we're going to talk about Charles Peck. In 2008, Charles was 48 years old and living in Salt Lake City, Utah. Growing up, he was one of four children with a brother and two sisters. The family lived in California during his younger years, and then they all moved to Missouri. As an adult, he moved around occasionally between California, Alaska, Nevada, and then Utah. He was the father of three adult children with his wife, Maria, but the marriage didn't last and the couple divorced after 24 years. He worked for Delta Airlines as a customer service agent, but he wanted to leave Utah and move to California. Just the year before, Charles had reconnected with an old family friend, Andrea, who lived in California, which is why he wanted to move there. Because they had started dating and Charles wanted to be closer. He would fly from Utah to California each weekend to spend time with her. And for people who don't know that when you work for the airline industry, you can get on cheap flights or free flights. And that's what he was using to get back and forth to California every weekend. The romance soon progressed and the couple got engaged. they had decided to wait for the wedding until Charles moved to California. So in September 2008, Charles traveled to LA for a job interview. He was hoping that he could grab this job and make a new home on the West Coast so he and Andrea could officially start their life together. After arriving at the Burbank Airport, Charles boarded the first passenger car of the Metrolink train. He was headed north to Simi Valley stop, where he would get off the train and go to Andrea's house. She was at home ironing clothes for his job interview, which was later that night. He called her and let her know that he would be there soon, so she left the house, headed for the train stop. She was going to go pick him up and take him back to the house and get him ready for his job interview. However, with just one stop to go before reaching the Simi Valley stop, there was a tragic accident with the train. This is the brutal part that leads to the bizarre story. The Metrolink engine collided head-on with a Union Pacific freight train, forcing the Metrolink engine backwards into the passenger car.
Two trains hit each other? Is that what I'm hearing?
Head-on.
Oh, shit.
The combined...
That's got to be gnarly.
Yeah, especially...
I can't imagine the wreckage.
The combined speed of the two engines was 83 miles per hour.
That is fast.
Yeah. It's fast.
It's a lot of mass traveling very fast.
Brutal. So while Andrea was driving to the train stop to pick up Charles, she heard about the crash over the radio. Fearing the worst, Andrea and Charles's family could only sit and wait while first responders attempted to locate all of the passengers. Soon, though, the family started to build some hope for Charles's safe return. Over the course of the next 11 hours, multiple people in his family received phone calls from Charles's phone. There were 35 total calls that came from his phone, going to his fiance, son, brother, stepmother, and sister. When they would answer the call, they only heard static and indefinite sounds on the other end of the line. The family yelled through the line, telling him to hold on and that help was on the way, but they received no response from Charles. So they're getting these phone calls. They're hearing it's an open line, but they can't hear him talking. They just hear background sounds, background noise. They're yelling, just wait, Charles, they're on their way. They're coming to get you. We love you. They'll be there soon. When the call would disconnect, they would call it back, but only get his voicemail. It went straight to voicemail. The repeated calls gave them hope that Charles was alive and waiting to be rescued. First responders used the cell phone signal to trace his location to the area of the first passenger car. 12 hours after the crash, rescuers finally found Charles, but unfortunately, he didn't survive the accident. In fact, they determined that he had been killed instantly from the collision.
Oh, that's spooky.
Uh-huh. Ironically, a cell phone being used by the Metrolink engineer might have caused the accident. He was distracted while texting on his own cell phone when he missed a red light warning, which caused the train to collide with the freight train on the same track.
Yes. Texting and training. Don't do it, people.
Right. Exactly. Distracted driving, not a good thing. Especially if you're driving a train full of people.
Yes.
Yeah. There was also a lack of a positive train system, which I had never heard of before, but it's a system that would have forced the Metrolink train to stop, allowing the freight train to pass first. So
interesting.
That system was not in place on those train tracks, which allowed the collision to occur when the guy missed the first signal. Well, the red light signal that would have told him to stop. So in total, 135...
If only they had that...
What's that?
If only they had that for the trolley problem, the ethical dilemma thing.
Oh.
But it's if you switch the lever, you run over four people, but if you don't, you run over one. They just had a positive train system, the train would stop.
Right. And then no one's getting run over four or one or anything. Yeah. In total, 135 people were injured in the crash and 25 people died, including Charles. There was no explanation why the loved ones had received repeated calls over those 11 hours. And more confusing was the fact that his phone was never located. So in all the wreckage.
That's weird. He took him with him to the afterlife. He's trying to call home.
Right. I mean, I like you said, that's
it's probably
a massive
impossible
collision.
To find a cell phone. Yeah. All right. That wreckage.
I mean, 2008.
Sure, the cell phone is the least of their concerns.
Right. There's a whole bunch of mess. They're just cleaning up the mess, but they didn't find a cell phone. But it wasn't one or two calls. It wasn't, immediately. It was 11 hours worth of calls, 35 times.
It's crazy.
It's
maybe just his phone. His hand was on the call button.
I mean, the phone was with him.
It'd be freaky if he had if there was a voicemail from him.
it would be super. Yeah. Boo.
Man, this train sucks.
Right, exactly.
That's all it says.
Yep. This was the worst train ride ever. Ugh. Wild.
That's terrifying.
I know. Do you have a chaser for us?
I do. My chaser is the ExoPulse Molly suit. And it is a suit that was designed in Sweden, I believe, by a chiropractor, Fredrik Lundqvist. I'm saying his name wrong. I'm 100% sure because I can't. Swedish names are really hard. It was developed by a chiropractor, a physiotherapist, and an H&M designer to help treat patients with Parkinson's and people who have had strokes.
Oh.
And it's a low-frequency electrostimulation suit that is able to sense their tremors and stimulate the muscle like opposite of it to stop the tremors and allow them to like walk normally. They have videos of them using it and they show like the before and after, and you can't even tell they have Parkinson's or anything. Like they're just walking like a normal person.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
They showed a video of them like eating soup, which I know is really hard for people with tremors because they just shake the soup out of the spoon, but they're just eating soup like normal. It's crazy.
So they have to wear it the whole time to receive the benefit.
Yeah.
It's not something that they can
wear. It's like a big black jumpsuit with like a bunch of wires on it and stuff, but I'd take it over having tremors.
Right. Well, and
it's not the most fashion worthy. You could probably seems pretty slim, so you could toss a jacket over it and no one would know.
That's better than we had a neighbor who he didn't have Parkinson's. He had non-essential tremors, which are different. I couldn't even tell you how. I don't know. It's a brain thing that's above my pay grade. But they put an electric stimulator in his brain and then he could control it with a remote, but it didn't work. I mean, it helped
didn't
to control the tremors, but it didn't completely stop them. And then they constantly had to get the stimulators like recalibrated and they would have to turn them up. And so his brain accommodated to it after a while and they were having to change it, and this sounds like a much less invasive and better methodology.
Yeah, it's literally just looks like a jumpsuit, like a
That's
a romper,
cool.
I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
That's cool. I like
Super
that.
Super awesome.
That's a good chaser.
What is your chaser?
My chaser is an Instagram account. And it is Mr. Professor 318. And that Mr. is MR, not MISTER, but MR Professor 318. You might have seen it. I don't know. Or you heard about it because I had seen a clip and then it was mentioned on an Armchair Expert.
Like okay.
A couple weeks ago, week ago. Anyway, this account, it's a middle-aged guy. I don't know how old he is, but he takes songs and he changes them from one genre and makes them a different one. So he takes like a pop song and turns it to a metal song, or he'll take a metal song or a hard rock song and turn it to yacht rock. And it's
interesting,
hilarious when you take a Metallica song and turn it to yacht rock, or a Motley yeah. Crue song and turn it to yacht rock. It's so funny. I'm going to try and link, maybe I can link his profile in one of our Instagram posts so that you can go to it and check out his different videos. He's got a bunch of videos where it's music related, and you know, you and I are both music junkies, so it fits right into our wheelhouse. But and of course, you know, as some people know, my guilty pleasure is yacht rock music. I know it's terrible. It's fine. I'm okay with it. I'll survive the ridicule, maybe. I don't know. But they turn out really good. Like the Metallica song into yacht rock sounds so good. And then when you realize it's Metallica, it makes you laugh that it's Metallica.
That reminds me, I heard this song, you know, Duality by Korn?
Probably. I'm not a Korn fan.
You've probably
I'm
heard
sure
it. I'm not
I've
either,
heard
but
the song, but I hate Korn. Sorry.
This guy, he turned the song Duality by Slipknot into elevator music. So,
oh, Duality by Slipknot is not the same as Korn.
I got it mixed up in my head. Yeah, Duality by Slipknot.
Okay.
He turned it into elevator music, and it's it's interesting. Like
okay.
I don't know how to describe it.
I don't know how you that would
it's like,
go, but
it's pretty good. Like, I mean, because he's kind of quiet in the beginning of that song, and then like it ramps up. But like in the beginning, when he's doing like the first chorus or whatever, it sounds pretty good.
Huh? I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Awesome.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode.
It does.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Love you, Mom.
Yes. Love you too, bud. Bye.
Yeah.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.